Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. First on the docket today, Brian Laundry. Is anyone getting any closer to finding him? Second, someone is paying the Murdoch's housekeeper's family, and it's not Alex Murdoch. Something you should not put in writing. Maya Marcano, her body was found. Another Colorado man charged. Gee, I wonder with what. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased true crime channel, the channel where a practicing criminal defense attorney explains the facts, the procedure, and the law to cold cases and current true crime cases as well. Welcome. Now, if you have not done so already, please hit the subscribe button, hit that bell, and make sure you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Tomorrow, we will go live. Please join us 6 p.m. Mountain Time. And if you don't have time to watch us on YouTube, do not forget to listen to all of the shows, current and past shows. You can download them on all of your favorite podcasting apps like Apple and Spotify. And we have seen our numbers shoot up big time. So thank you very much for listening to us on the podcast version. All right, before we get to the docket, let's support the people that support Crime Talk. Please go to crimetalkprep.com and claim your three-month emergency food kit. That's right. In today's world of supply chain shortages and unknown changing rules, you don't know what will be next. True story. Went to Costco the other day. They are now limiting, once again, the number of rolls of toilet paper that people can get. I had to go to the car dealership to get a new tire for my car. Guess what? 6-week wait. There apparently is a tire shortage. They can't get anything in the supply chain. You've probably seen this before. Is it going to get to the food next? We'll have to wait and see. Well, when you go to crimetalkprep.com, you'll receive $100 off the best-selling three-month emergency food kit. This food stays fresh for up to 25 years in proper storage, so it will be there when you need it. And the meals in the food kit average over 2,000 calories per day to make sure you have the energy you need to go on. So go to crimetalkprep.com, claim your three-month emergency food kit, and you'll receive $100 off. I'm telling you, it's the smart thing to do. All right, Brian Laundry, he's still out there. No one's been able to find him just yet, but let's give you the breaking news that we have thus far. Haywood County's officials are investigating a viral social media tip from a Florida man who claims to have seen Brian Laundry in the Appalachian Mountains in North Carolina. Now, the latest tip comes from a guy by the name of Dennis Davis, who said he saw Brian driving a white truck near Waterville Road along the North Carolina-Tennessee border. Now, Chief Deputy Jeff Haynes with the Haywood County Sheriff's Office said that their office has received a number of calls about Brian Laundry over the last several days. Davis said he saw Laundry in a parking lot near an entrance for the Appalachian Trail. Davis said that Laundry appeared to be high. There's no doubt about it. That was Brian Laundry. I just was talking to 100%, no doubt in my mind. That's what Davis told law enforcement. Now, Davis said that Brian told him, "Me and my girlfriend had a fight, and man, I love her, and she called me, and I need to go to California to see her." Law enforcement have not been able to confirm this sighting whatsoever. Now, the family of Brian Laundry believes he is still in Florida and is holding out hope that he is still safe. Now, they're concerned, according to the family attorney, Steve Bertolino, but they hope that he is found alive. Well, for now, the FBI is trying to piece together Laundry's actions for the past month, including this family camping trip in early September, as well as an alleged new phone he purchased after Petito went missing. Now, Bertolino, the attorney, now says that Brian's sister, Cassie, saw Brian twice after his return to Florida after Petito went missing on September 1st and again on September 6th. In an interview with Good Morning America that aired on September 17th, Cassie said of Brian, "I haven't been able to talk to him. I wish I could talk to him." Now, Bert Delino issued a statement saying, in part, law enforcement agencies are well aware of these dates. Any prior communication by Cassie that does not reflect these dates is simply a difference of relating an answer to a question misinterpreted by Cassie or poorly posed by the inquirer. Now, let's talk about this for a second. As someone who has represented people accused of crime for some 26 years, I've had lots of people disappear. I've had people harm themselves and they are found out in the middle of nowhere. I've had people that have left. Some have said, "I'm leaving," others have not. And as an attorney, it would be unethical for an attorney to advise somebody to leave the state when they know that charges are actually been filed or pending, and or a court date is coming up. You can't do that. Now, my experience is that most people that don't show up for court usually stay within a very close radius of their house. When I mean close radius, I'm usually meaning about, 14 blocks, because that's what they know. That's the people that they know, and they have nowhere else to go. Now, old Brian Laundrie, he's pretty sophisticated, I would say, as compared to most. He knew the heat was on. He left. He did what most people don't do. He was exercising some discipline by not taking his phone with him. Apparently, he's been able to exercise some discipline by not reaching out and contacting his family, because I guarantee you, although the phones aren't tapped, it actually takes a lot of work to tap a phone, calls in and out to all of these cell phones that the family may have are being monitored. Mark my word on that. The other thing about this that catches me from somebody that has known people that have disappeared, the family is just a little too relaxed, okay? If you thought your son or daughter was missing, would you be staying at home ordering food? No. You would be out there searching for your kid if you thought that something was going on. You would be out there so that you would be able to get them, take them, and turn them in safely, so basically a mob doesn't get him and do something to harm him when they find him. But they're not, because they know, okay? Now, this is my opinion. They know that the authorities and everybody else are looking in the wrong spots. I don't know if this guy in North Carolina saw Brian Laundrie, if that's him. My personal hunch, my guess is that everyone thinks he went north. I think he went south. I think he went south on a boat somewhere and is drinking a fuzzy little drink somewhere with a little umbrella on it. We'll see who's right. I don't know. But I think by the indication of the family, they aren't too concerned that the authorities are looking in the right spot. That's just my guess. All right. And it's a guess. I know we'd like to stick to the facts, but as a trial attorney, I like to think I've developed some good gut instincts, and the family just looks a little too calm. They are too calm. Now, a warrant for Brian Laundrie's arrest was issued in late September, obviously accusing him of this unauthorized use of a debit card. He's only been named a person of interest in Petito's death, but has not been named an actual suspect in her death. Now, the Palm Beach County State Attorney says that prosecutors in Sarasota County are likely not to rush to file additional more charges because of various procedural rules. For instance, he says that the defendants in Florida are entitled to a speedy trial, meaning that once formal charges are filed against the individual, they have 188 days to present their case at trial. Now, that's a little interesting to me, because I've never heard of a case where you have to present the case at trial when the defendant hasn't been arrested. So this is a prime example, ladies and gentlemen, of why hopefully you watch Crime Talk, okay? We're going to explain it to you. Nobody in the state has an obligation to get somebody to trial that hasn't been arrested or appeared in front of a judge or entered a plea of not guilty. You got to be careful in what you watch and who you listen to, so you make sure that you get it right. Now, another issue that a lot of people have been asking about in the comments are, what kind of crime could the parents be charged with? And well, at this point, since the mere fact that the laundries have lawyered up, it seems pretty unlikely that they would be charged with some sort of false statement or attempting to influence a public official. And those names of the charges would vary from state to state, but you get the idea. You know, Martha Stewart didn't go to prison for securities insider trading. She went to prison for lying to the FBI. It's kind of their catch-all backdrop when they have nothing else. I don't think the family is going to be charged with anything unless there's some proof that they are somehow still in contact with Brian Laundrie and are helping him escape. Because remember, when Brian Laundrie disappeared, no charges had been filed. There's nothing he could do. Now, of course, now he's going to say, well, I went on a little walkabout and really nothing should bad happen to me. I had no idea. You shouldn't use this about me because I had no idea. I haven't been in touch with anybody at all. So, you know, we'll see if he's ultimately found, but you just never know. Now, back to Utah as it relates to Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie. So there's been some new emails discovered that suggest that maybe the Moab, Utah police chief may have purposely delayed releasing additional body cam footage of the dispute between Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie. On August 12th, Moab officers obviously made contact with Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie in regards to this alleged physical altercation. And despite reports of witnesses seeing Laundrie hitting Petito, the officers determined that the incident was due to mental health issues. They separated the pair for the night. While body cam footage released indicated that neither Petito nor Laundrie wanted to press charges, but both admitted that Petito was the aggressor. The two officers that responded that day were Officer Pratt and Robbins, but the Moab police did not release Pratt's camera at first. Meanwhile, the Moab police officer, Kelly Day, who is reportedly responsible for public records request, is currently under investigation for allegedly redacting footage from a separate case in February in which a police officer reportedly used offensive language. Now, Day apparently came under investigation after the Grand County attorney, Happy Morgan, filed a complaint on September 16th and accused her of hiding portions of the body cam footage. We'll wait and see. Now, as the manhunt continues, the nationwide manhunt continues, has been joined, obviously, by Dog the Bounty Hunter, whose real name is Dwayne Chapman. Well, Chapman has obviously become popular in the search after he set up his own private tip line, which apparently has at least 2,000 calls, of which 20% were actual leads. Old Dog the Bounty Hunter says he's turned over evidence found at a makeshift Florida campsite to the FBI as he continues his hunt for Brian Laundrie. Now, Chapman said in an interview last Friday, "We found a makeshift but yet a very primitive camp that has some promising things around it. So he's gathered up all those things with gloves and baggies and turned it over to the FBI." Not exactly sure what he claims will be a lead there, but we'll have to wait and see. Maybe it was a discarded cigarette butt. Who knows? I guess anything could be of evidentiary value, assuming that was actually Brian Laundrie's primitive campsite. Now, after repeatedly saying that old Chapman doesn't coordinate with cops, Chapman's contacted a private search and rescue canine team to get his search underway on an island called Egmont Key, which is off the coast of St. Petersburg, Florida. The search has been centered around Florida's DeSoto Park in Pinellas County, where the Laundries went camping with Brian between September 6th and 8th. Now, apparently, Chapman is now interested in working with law enforcement and has confirmed that an off-duty officer has joined his team the past couple of days. And he let it be known that he also has apparently some former Navy SEALs and Marines helping in the search. So we'll see. Like I said, you can be getting close to something if you actually know that you're there trying to find something. But if you don't know what you don't know, and nobody knows where to begin. I mean, he had a 4-day head start, ladies and gentlemen. 4 days. You could travel to the other side of the world in 4 days. We'll see. I don't think he went that far. I still think it's going to be a nice warm climate where they find him. We'll wait and see. Next on the docket, money's being paid to the housekeeper. Yep, the housekeeper of Alex Murdoch, but it's not Alex Murdoch. Remember, The heirs of the longtime Murdoch family housekeeper who died in 2018, which was initially described as an accidental fall, will now receive money from a prior $4.3 million settlement agreement that her estate's attorney says was never paid. Now, in a statement Sunday announcing the arrangement, attorneys in South Carolina for Gloria Satterfield's two sons said that Corey Fleming, a lawyer who had previously represented them in the wrongful death settlement in 2019, had stepped forward and is going to do the right thing. Fleming agreed that he and his law firm will pay the estate the legal fees and expenses that they collected, and their insurance carrier will also pay its full policy limits. We'll talk about that more. Now, this new settlement was reached about 2 weeks after Satterfield's adult sons, Michael, Tony Satterfield, and Brian Harriet, filed a lawsuit accusing her employer, Alex Murdoch, Fleming, and others of breach of fiduciary duty in failing to pay them as a part of the wrongful death settlement. As her beneficiaries, her sons should have received over $2.7 million in life insurance proceeds, according to the previously undisclosed court order. Now, according to the son's suit, the exact details of the fall remain unclear, but the Murdochs initially pledged that he was going to take care of the boys by suing himself to collect on personal liability insurance through the provider, Lloyd's of London. 10 months after Satterfield's death, a proposed $505,000 partial settlement was reached through Lloyd's, money that should have gone to her sons, but which their attorneys say was never paid to them, and they didn't even know they were owed until learning about it through the news reports. Now, the circumstances surrounding Satterfield's death were questioned last month by the Hampton County coroner, who requested her case be reopened because no autopsy was previously performed. On the death certificate, the manner of death was ruled natural, which is inconsistent with injuries sustained in a trip and fall accident. Those are according to the notes that the coroner wrote in the investigation. So, what does this really mean? We know that Alex Murdoch used his college roommate to be these kids' attorney, and they didn't get any money. But the attorney says that his firm is going to pay back the fees, right? Figure 45% of $4.7 million. It's a pretty good chunk of change. So he's going to pay back those monies, any expenses that he would be entitled to if he was legitimately representing somebody, and then his insurance company is going to pay policy limits. Now, most attorneys, okay, even small, but if you're doing primarily PI, you probably have a big policy, a million to 10. Most people carry at least a million, but could be up to 10 million. So that means the insurance carriers were paying policy limits, which means somebody at that firm screwed up. They were either in on the scam or were the complete victims of a scam. But either way, their insurance company threw up the white flag just like that. And guess what? Insurance companies don't throw up the white flag when it involves paying seven figures or more at any given time. So this must be bad, bad for that law firm. And I bet they're going to get a notice saying that their policy is not going to be renewed. So at least they were able to get a little good press out of it, saying they stepped up and did the right thing. Yeah, stepping up by giving back fees that was part of a fraud put on by Alex Murdoch that maybe you were implicated in, and then your insurance carrier paying policy limits. Good way to spin it. You're stepping up doing the right thing. Probably trying to save a law license and not go to prison as well. That's for sure. All right, next on the docket. Now, as an attorney, you always tell people, get it in writing. Get the agreement in writing. And then have your attorney look it over. But here's something you may not want to put in writing, okay? And that is having your underage sex slave sign a contract. That's right. A Florida man by the name of Andrew Michael Mustapick, 66, is accused of sexually abusing a teenage girl, and he was booked into the Indian River County Jail on September 27th. Now, the allegation is that Mustapick met the girl, then 17, through a 19-year-old friend and agreed to buy the older girl a car in exchange for sex. The younger girl, now 18, allegedly told the sheriff's investigators that after he bought the car, she was forced to have sex with him. He made her sign, that's right, a contract. The document detailed her schedule with him and the kinds of acts that he wanted her to do. She did remember a clause within the contract stating that she would be his sex slave twice a week on Mondays and Fridays for the next 5 years. Now, the 19-year-old friend drove the younger girl to Mustapik's home twice, but the child stopped returning after the third sexual encounter. Now, the 66-year-old took back the vehicle after the girl did not uphold her end of the contract. Can't have people breaching contracts, can we? Now, investigators said that they found evidence backing up the story. There was alleged pictures and footage on the phone of the alleged sexual acts and other images of the woman and Muskapik at his home when she was only 17 years old. On top of that, a detective found the 2017 Volkswagen registered to Mustapik and the 19-year-old girl's name. It was bought on June 3rd of 2020 and sold the following August 24th, according to the police. Now, investigators said that Mustapik denied to them that he knew the girl and he stopped answering their calls. He started contacting the teenage girl again, however, asking for an in-person meeting, asking if she was done with high school, and asking her if she wanted to participate in another contract. Mustapik faces a count of unlawful sexual activity with certain minors. So, yes, Mr. Mustapik, you obviously must have had an attorney advise you at some point, and you knew that you probably should get it in writing. Or maybe someone previously agreed to your little plan and they left and never came back, so you wanted it in writing. Well, guess what? A contract can be void for what they say is void for public policy reasons. What's that fancy term mean? It simply means it's illegal. You can't create a contract for illegal conduct. It's void. So when you have a 66-year-old guy trying to have relationships with a 17-year-old, just weird and creepy, it's not right and illegal still in most states. So you have to just remember, you can't make something legal by having a contract around it, okay? Just remember that. And one more thing. All you teenage girls out there, I'm sorry. No teenage girl wants to date their grandfather, okay? That's weird. That's creepy. I know somebody will say, oh, that doesn't matter. What's a 50-year age difference? Does it matter 40-year age difference? It matters to everybody. It's just not the cool thing. I know somebody will say something in the comments. Oh, my gosh, I've been married to somebody 40 years difference, and it's a great relationship. I get it. Okay, to the rest of the world, though, it's just not right. The only way that she'd be hanging out with a 66-year-old was, well, for the car. And even she realized that a car is not worth doing that. Before we move on, let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about, what was in their background? Now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. All right. And we're back. Maya Marcano. Well, a body was found Saturday morning in the search for the missing 19-year-old Maya Marcano, days after the prime suspect, Armando Caballero, died by suicide. The search for the missing Florida teenager ended with tragic news Saturday morning when police found what they believed to be the 19-year-old's body. Marcano's purported remains were discovered around 10:45 a.m. in the timber scan on the lake condominiums, according to the Orange County Sheriff John Mina, who said this during a press conference. Now, although Mina said they were very certain of the identity, obviously they were going to await official announcement until determination by the medical examiners. Detectives were led to the apartment complex by the phone records of the now deceased prime suspect, Armando Caballero, who died by suicide. Records show that Caballero was in the area for around 20 minutes between 8 p.m. and 9 p.m. on September 24th, the evening that Marcano was reported missing. Now, she was a sophomore at Valencia College and was last seen at 5 p.m. on Friday at the Arden Villas Apartments in Orlando, where she lived and worked in the leasing office. Now, Caballero, 27, had worked in the maintenance part of the complex since June. Now, Caballero expressed a romantic interest in Marcano, but he was repeatedly rebuffed. And that's where things went sour. Maya wasn't interested. We are still trying to investigate all the circumstances behind exactly what happened. But apparently, he was found in her apartment at one point and, obviously freaked her out. We now know that that a maintenance issued master key, which Caballero was known to be in possession of, was used to enter into Maya's apartment on Friday afternoon about 4:30 p.m. This would have been about 30 minutes before she finished her shift at the apartment complex. Now, investigators did, in fact, issue an arrest warrant for Caballero and were searching for him over the weekend before they found him dead in his apartment. So, sad situation, ladies and gentlemen. I just don't get it. You know, guys, if a girl says no, it means no. Move along. Move along. You certainly don't get to go into somebody's apartment and, you know, do terrible things to anybody. I just don't get it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, once again, if the husband says, let's pack up and move to Colorado, be afraid. Be very, very afraid. That's right. A Colorado man by the name of Scott Smith, 46, was arrested after he called 911 and reported that he shot his wife, a Kenaquan Smith, last November, but he was released when prosecutors said that they didn't have enough evidence to bring him to trial. Now, Smith, who had previously said last year that he had no choice but to kill his wife in self-defense, has now been charged with her murder. Friends and neighbors said that at the time, Kenaquan Smith, whose family live in Thailand, was just not the type to attack anyone. The Jefferson County Sheriff's Office continued investigating the case, and last week, deputies went to the home, arrested Smith again, and charged him with first-degree murder, tampering with physical evidence, and domestic violence. Now, Smith's mother, 66-year-old Teresa Rhino, was also arrested, charged on Friday with being an accessory, attempting to tamper with physical evidence, and conspiracy to commit tampering with physical evidence. Rhino, the mom, was given a $5,000 bond. Smith was ordered held without bond and is due in court on November 8th. I don't know. There's something about the West. Maybe it's the water. I'm not sure. But something just seems like it takes place a lot more out here than in other places. Maybe it's just because this is the area that I live. But it sure seems like there's a lot of wives disappearing out here. If you don't like your wife, ladies and gentlemen, okay, I urge you, seek a divorce. Do not kill anyone. Please, please. It's not worth it. Nobody deserves to die like that. Okay? Hopefully that's a good enough statement, because there's somebody that will say I'm somehow condoning violence or something along those lines. All right, next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant winner and our new contestant for this week. Our dumb criminal contestant winner, James Kurtz, the man from Missouri. He posted a photo on Facebook Marketplace trying to sell new catalytic converters. Well, that photo also showed a little more than auto parts. It also showed a large bag of methamphetamine and a syringe on the table in the background. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Only one thing worse than taking your phone to a crime scene is, well, documenting it on your phone and then putting it on social media. It doesn't get any dumber than that. Congratulations, you are a Dumb Criminal Contestant winner of the week. And this mug, you can, that's right, you can take a photo of it, put it on Facebook, you can do that. But keep the meth out of the cup, all right? Today's Dumb Criminal, Matthew Cusimano, 46, was stopped around 2:45 Friday by cops who spotted him riding a bicycle without any lights on. You know, and listen, ladies and gentlemen, bikes without lights, it's a gateway crime. Next thing you know, you're robbing banks. You just never know where it's going to stop, right? Fortunately, Madeira police were there. They pulled over Mr. Cusimano. He was taken into custody. Why? Was it for the headlights? No. They searched him and found two drug pipes and 10 grams of a substance reportedly identified as methamphetamines. Well, Cusimano, what did he say? He claimed that the confiscated items were medical methamphetamine. Possible. I'm not aware of any place that has legalized methamphetamine for medical reasons. I think you need a prescription to get those drugs that produce the same effect. You can't get them from your street drug dealer. You got to go to the legitimate drug dealer, the pharmacist. All right. And I can say that since my ex-wife was, well, a pharmacist. Still is. All right. That's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. Please join us tomorrow night, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, when we go live. We'll answer your questions. And then immediately following that, we'll have our Patreon show where you can call in. We've got to answer the magic eight ball question. The magic eight ball, I don't think it's been wrong yet. So we'll see. Thanks for watching. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.